Welcome back. You're listening to Nate the Hate on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcast. Be sure to like the video and subscribe to the channel if you have not already. And with that, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Modern Vintage Gamer.
What's going on, Nate? It's great to be here.
And we have a lot to talk about in this episode because Microsoft had just encountered a significant leak, ironically of their own doing, due to the ongoing hearing regarding the Activision Blizzard King acquisition that Microsoft is still actively pursuing. And a lot of files were accidentally linked to in an FTC upload that Microsoft had provided by their own hand. And while a lot of the conversation has been ongoing over the last week or so about emails, about, you know, Microsoft wanting to acquire Nintendo or how Microsoft approaches Game Pass deals, there was a significant leak in terms of Microsoft's current 10-year plan for the Xbox ecosystem, which would bring them until 2030, as most of these slides had originated from 2020. And there was one significant slide, and it's about a couple of console revisions that are currently slated for release during the calendar year of 2024. One of the revisions is a Series S revision that would basically just introduce a 1 terabyte model with more efficient hardware, so energy consumption is lesser for the individual. Whereas the more meaningful leak was Microsoft's intent on bringing a Xbox Series X digital only with 2 terabytes and, again, more energy efficient to the market. But what the slide had stipulated is that this digital-only Series X would also be positioned as a full-on replacement for the current Series X, which does take physical media. So with the introduction of this digital-only Series X, we would basically find our way in a digital-only Xbox ecosystem come the second half of 2024. And this is a fairly significant shift when you look at the gaming industry, as up to now, every single platform has offered a physical medium alternative. And now if Microsoft really does embrace a digital-only solution, is the consumer base ready to adopt such a platform? And now I want to go to you, MVG. What do you think about Microsoft potentially introducing a digital-only Series X and basically moving away from the retail option that we currently have that does use physical media?
Well, I mean, I made a tweet about this about a week ago, which got a lot of people upset with me, where I attacked Xbox for not embracing physical media and not really believing in preservation, which really upset people because, you know, they were very quick to remind me they've been pioneers of the backward compatibility program for such a long time. And yes, that's absolutely correct. However, that's not what we're really talking about here. We're talking about an ecosystem that has options for physical media. And the perception, and it seems like, right, based on the slide deck that you were talking about, and I believe this model is called the Brooklyn model. Is that right? Brooklyn? I think it's the code
yes,
name.
Yes, the Series X is Brooklyn. Yep. The Series S is Elwood.
Yes. So it seems like this is, as you mentioned, a refresh, right? So this is something that the original Series X will see an end of life, and they will refresh that end of life with this newer Brooklyn model, which does away with the physical media. And I think that's a very, very big concern to me, for a couple of reasons, and I don't want to talk about all of them, but I'll highlight, you know, the main points. Number one is that if you are invested in the Series X, then you come with that investment knowing that, number one, you have the most powerful console in the world, but you also have certain features of that platform, and one of those features is an optical drive. So Microsoft is effectively taking that away from you. So, you know, some people have invested in the Series X because they like physical media. They have a collection of not only Xbox One games, they have Xbox Series games, physical media games. They also want to play some of their old 360 games and even maybe as far back as the OG Xbox days. Now, yes, there, all this stuff is available on digital storefronts. But as we've seen, digital storefronts are starting to close. The Xbox 360 store is having an end of life. There are going to be games that are delisted, and some games will never be able to be played again. But again, I don't want to preach about preservation. I want to stay on topic here. So point number one is you're taking away that optical drive, and that is a red flag to me. And I guess the second thing is you're closing the door on people that have invested in Xbox and have purchased physical media for such a very long time. There are people out there that not only collect games, there are some people out there that only play physical media. And to kind of add to that as well, you know, having a ecosystem where you've pretty much closed the door on physical, you know, that whole concept of secondhand games, you know, from GameStop, you can't borrow games anymore. You can't resell your games anymore. You can only buy them from one digital storefront. And again, people may kind of argue, well, what about PC? That's digital. Well, it is. You're right, but you have options on PC. Typically, you'll have Steam, you'll have GOG if you want the DRM-free approach. You'll have the Epic Game Store. You'll have, you know, the various other storefronts that are available. You have more freedom and flexibility, and you do have the ability to download or purchase a DRM-free copy of a game if it's available on GOG. But I think, you know, my big concern here really is it seems like Microsoft is not really interested in supporting physical media. Now, of course, we know that maybe they'll you know, give us a detachable drive, but there's really no evidence of that either based on the slide deck that we did see. They didn't really mention anything about add-on peripherals or anything like that. So we can only really speculate on what we have seen. And, you know, I guess the last point here is Phil Spencer did say that recently, and I guess maybe it was a bit of damage control, let's be honest, you know, because I think he was on the flight to Tokyo Game Show and he probably would have landed in Tokyo and seen his Twitter blow up completely. But, you know, he did say that plans change. And look, plans do change, but I also can only speculate on the information that was presented at the hearing. And look, that information was submitted as evidence. It went, you know, it was a part of the hearing there. So we can really only speculate on what we know. And it seems like that Xbox is going to start embracing an all digital future. So I guess, you know, those are my main concerns as to why I feel like it's not a good move for them.
It's definitely an interesting move for them to make, because when you think about a digital only platform, it's not exactly something that's been new to the industry. We can go back as far as the PSP Go.
Absolutely.
Where we saw, you know, a digital only revision.
Yep.
And at the time, people were generally well received to the PSP Go because it was a fantastic little piece of hardware. And as we've moved on from there, digital has become commonplace, largely due to convenience. I think my hangup with this digital-only Series X revision is that if there's not an add-on optical drive,
yeah,
and you truly are now shifting to a digital-only ecosystem, you have to wonder, how is the consumer base going to respond to such a product? Because if it does phase out the current Series X, you're no longer giving consumers an option now.
Right.
As you're currently doing, you have the option of buying a Series X or a Series S, depending on your budget and your gaming needs. But even if you buy a Series X, you don't necessarily ever have to buy physical media. The option is there for you. But once you go digital only with your piece of hardware, much like buying a PlayStation 5 digital system, you're only viable option there is digital media.
Yep.
So you don't have that option of even going out and, you know, buying a disc or buying an add-on drive, which is currently rumored will be the case for the PlayStation 5 revision that remains to be announced. But based on the slide we have for the Series X, there is no physical revision happening for the hardware that will come with 2 terabytes of memory. It's simply this digital only system. So it feels as though Microsoft is potentially stripping consumers of that option. So how would you really market this as beneficial to the consumer base, that we're taking away the option from you of how you consume gaming and media in general.
Well, they marketed it as adorably all digital, right? That's how you do it, which is terrible. Look, you pretty much said the same things as I did. Consumers want options. You know, it's okay if you have your entire set of hardware is all digital, but if you do have that option to attach a drive to these things, and maybe offer some kind of legacy, you know, way to play older games or physical games. But essentially what Microsoft seems to be doing here is closing the door on not only their legacy as far as the backward compatibility program, because yeah, sure, you can have digital only games running under backward compatibility, and you can buy games on the 360 and play them digitally now. So I'm not disputing that. All I'm saying is the people that have invested in these ecosystem or the Xbox ecosystem for many, many years and do have a legacy of old games, you're closing the door on those people. Now, look, that may be a very small minority of people that care about, you know, playing Xbox these days. There's certainly a lot to be said about how popular backward compatibility actually is, because we don't really see those types of numbers. But again, I think that the key thing here is that consumers want choices. They want options. If they want to play physical media, then it's really up to the hardware maker to give them that option, whether that is just a $100 detachable drive or not. But basically what Microsoft appears to be doing here is it's almost a statement, because this is the first, you know, hardware maker that is going to, at least based on what we've seen, go all digital. And they're kind of making a statement. They're almost, you know, pushing the market in that direction. They're kind of forcing that movement. Even though it seems like everyone's starting to move to digital anyway, this is basically Microsoft putting a stake in the ground and saying, okay, this is where we start to become a digital only kind of company at this point. So look, I guess it's inevitable that someone had to do this, right? But I think really for me, it's just, again, we don't know exactly, but it seems to me as though there's not going to be another choice. And I think that's the part that really bothers me.
Do you think this is a mistake for Microsoft to introduce in 2024, as the slides suggest? Because according to rumor right now, they would be introducing this digital-only Series X right around the same time PlayStation 5 Pro will be introduced to the market, which, to our understanding, may be digital-only, but will have the add-on optical drive option available to consumers.
I don't know if it's a mistake, because really what it comes down to is the quality of your games. And part of me thinks that, well, part of me likes to believe that by that time, 2025, Microsoft will be firing on all cylinders and really doing that thing where they were talking about, Aaron Greenberg and Phil Spencer have been talking about one big game a quarter. Hopefully they're at that point. So if the games are good, then you can't really say it's a misstep in that regard. But, you know, if we are comparing two pieces of hardware with each other, and the PlayStation 5 Pro, we'll just call it for now, does have the option to have a physical or an optical drive that's attached to it, and Xbox doesn't, then yes, I do think it's a misstep. I think it's something that Microsoft ultimately have put themselves on the back foot for. And again, yeah, we know that that digital sales are dominating. They're only going to continue to get more dominant as time goes on. But you're basically, and I hate to say it, Nate, but you're basically just giving a middle finger to anyone that invested in Xbox, you know, for over many, many years. And other than people that, you know, only bought digital games going as far back as the 360 days, right? But other than that, you're basically just, you know, shutting the door on a subsection of your fan base. And I don't think that's a good thing in anyone's book.
Yeah, that's the curious thing I have with this. is that if there were a way that if I'm playing an original Xbox game or any of my physical Xbox games, be it on 360, Xbox One, or the current series generation, is if there was some way that I could get a digital license after proving ownership, then I would understand this digital-only move that Microsoft seems to be going in for 2024 with the introduction of this system. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I can't do that, that there is no means for me to do so, people would say, well, that's why you buy the current Series X. And you'd be 100% correct to say that. But the second that it is phased out, as the slides suggest, in the second half of 2024, the duration of this generation, as far as we can tell, based again on the slide deck, we cannot operate under the assumption that there is a disk drive add-on going to be offered or that there will be an additional revision to the Series X that has full, you know, physical media. There will be no physical option from late 2024 until, I guess, the introduction of new hardware come 2028. Mm-hmm. So if you're not already invested in that physical option, your time is running out. It's going to expire within the next 12 to 18 months. Mm-hmm. And if you're Microsoft, I feel as though you really have to be clear and transparent with that move, because you do have late adopters into any console generation. And that's just naturally. And as you brought up, a lot of it will come down to if you have the games, individuals will come. Yep. And it doesn't matter if it's a digital-only platform or if it has the option of physical media. If you have the games, people will invest in your ecosystem. But everyone has a preference. And some still hold the preference of they want to have physical media, even though a lot of Xbox games, even PlayStation 5 games and Switch games, they are essentially just licenses on a game card or a DVD. They don't even feature the entire game on the disc. You have to download the game. Once you insert it, it gives you the license, it checks it, and you begin a 70 gig download. But people like having that option of having something physical in their hand, yep, that they believe they have ownership of, because as you brought up, the secondhand market in gaming is very substantial. People like being able to go to GameStop or Facebook Marketplace or wherever and sell their game, get a little value back from the product that they had purchased for $70. And right now, there is no means of us being able to sell our digital goods. So once you invest the $70 digital-only game, that's all you have. You cannot get rid of it, whether you like it or not. And this is kind of where I see this digital-only platform making a lot of sense for Microsoft, is they want you to subscribe to Game Pass, digital service.
That's the key thing. I feel like Game Pass is front and center, the only thing that Microsoft is invested in and they're interested in. Look, they want to get those Game Pass subscriptions up. We saw the numbers. You know, Jim Ryan, even though he announced his retirement recently, kind of, you know, mocked Microsoft, saying, look, 25 million is good, but it's nowhere near enough. Now, whether that is true or not, I couldn't say. You may be able to speak to that better than I can. But look, Microsoft knows that their future is reliant on Game Pass and making sure that not only do they secure Game Pass deals for big third parties, smaller indies, and more importantly, you know, their first party output. So if they can kind of deliver on that, then I think they're in really, really good shape. But, you know, my question to you is, why now? Like, why does Microsoft decide next year that they're going to go all digital? Why don't you wait till the end of the generation where, you know, you could say, look, it's 2030 or whenever it is, 2028. We don't know. I mean, let's say 2028. You could sell that to your customers a lot better than kind of, you know, midway through the generation. Because if we are talking about 2024, that we will see a refresh of the Series X to the Brooklyn model, that's not that really not that much time between now and then. Like, we're talking, you know, it could be as early as 6 months, it could be a year, but we know it's not going to be any longer than, say, 18 months. So why does Microsoft decide to make this move now is the big question.
I think it's a lot like going into a cold pool they want to ease you into this transition. And by easing it at the midway point of this generation, where they're looking at their sales with the Series S versus the Series X, and the Series S does lead.
It does.
Yes, it leads by a very small margin. I believe the split is somewhere in the area of like maybe 55-45, but it could be even slimmer than that.
But hold that thought, because I want to hear the second part of what you want to say. The Series S, you knew exactly what you were investing in. You knew exactly right. That it was a digital-only product. And that's the thing. The Series X has an optical drive. And that being taken away from you, I think, is a big red flag.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a red flag, as we've discussed. And I think I would assume Microsoft probably has some sort of data that would indicate how many Series X models are actually using physical media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how many are just purely digital only.
You're quite right.
And we don't know that split.
Yep.
We know software sales largely across the industry are favoring digital in most markets.
And to be completely honest with you, even though I'm kind of preaching this stuff right now, what do we use our Xbox for right now, Nate? We use it for Call of Duty, Game Pass,
right?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, kind of these live service games. I don't have a disc in my Series X right now. I'm not playing anything physically. So, you know, that's the data that they have.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. If I were to propose the question to you, how many physical Xbox Series games do you own?
Quite a lot. Series games? I have a bunch of those smart delivery games where, you know, they have like the lowest common denominator on the disc. So I probably have about 20, I want to say. Okay. And that's split between these smart delivery discs and just the Series X discs.
Okay. So you're kind of split. Mm-hmm. You do buy physical media for select games if you have that option.
Definitely.
Okay. So you see, and that's the thing, is that I think Microsoft is looking at the data and they want to ease that transition for people. They introduced you to digital consumption heavily this generation via Game Pass, where they're saying you can play all of our games with Game Pass. And when you look at Microsoft's retail offerings this generation, they've been very sparse unless you are a AAA release. So yes, Halo is there. Forza Horizon 5 is there. Forza will be there. Redfall is there. Starfield is there.
Yeah.
Then you have other releases. Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush. Never got retail release. And people can say, well, yeah, they're smaller games. But in prior generations, they would have had a physical presence. There's really nothing cheap or non-AAA about Hi-Fi Rush, except for the price.
Right.
That game would 100% be a retail release in any other generation, but Microsoft has kept it digital only because they're trying to entice you to go with the Game Pass and invest in that digital ecosystem. So by introducing it midway through, you're walking down the ladder into cooler water that you're a little hesitant in. You're not quite sure if you like the digital only platform, but as you stay in it for the rest of this generation, you begin to adjust and you become more familiar with it. And all of a sudden you find it refreshing. You like it. You like the convenience it offers you. You like being able to go from one game to the other using quick resume and having hundreds of games right from the system. And now time for the next generation. And let's say Microsoft goes digital only. There is no physical option for whatever the next Xbox is called.
Yeah.
You've become so familiar with this, you're fine with it because you're saying, well, all my games are digital only at this point anyways. I'm subscribed to Game Pass and those games are digital only. So I don't really have any need for a disc anymore. And I guess you could say the transition may be very similar to what PC gamers went through close to 20 years ago when Steam took over and revolutionized the PC market.
Yeah.
Because you could buy PC games on DVD and it would, you know, you'd have to install 8 of them and then you could play your game. Or you could go to Steam and download the game and you just had access on it. And that's all you had to do. And now look at the PC market. How many PC games are actually sold physically right now?
Oh, zero. Absolutely zero. I mean, I'd be very surprised if any game came on physical media anymore on PC.
Yeah, so I mean, that was kind of a revolution that at the time some people may have said, I don't know if I like this. But as you ease into it, you begin to embrace it. And I think that's what Microsoft is trying to do here. They're just trying to transition us into that digital-only ecosystem that, and to be frank, is what the industry as a whole wants the consumer to become well-adjusted to.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, PlayStation didn't drop a digital-only SKU for no reason. And I mean, look, Nintendo's probably going to be the last company, the last man standing, if you will. Next generation will most likely have a cartridge slot in there, let's be honest. I don't think that's going to change, but maybe the generation after potentially could be all digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, do you think with this move by Microsoft, and Microsoft has been an industry leader in several ways, you could look at, like, yes, online gaming existed before Xbox Live, but Xbox Live took it mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Digital storefronts existed before the Xbox 360, but the Xbox 360 made it mainstream.
Yep.
Now, could digital only gaming for the home console become mainstream due to Microsoft pushing the industry in that direction? Sony has dipped their toe in it.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned with the PlayStation 5 digital system. They also did it, as we mentioned prior, with the PSP Go.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo has not fully embraced a digital-only platform, but they have dipped their toe in a different way. And that's with the voucher system on the Nintendo Switch and the eShop, where they give you an incentive to buy games digitally by offering you a slight discount. So it's clear that Sony and Nintendo want you to go digital-only. It's just they're not being as aggressive as Microsoft seems to be doing with the introduction of the Series X digital coming late next year. But they are trying to ease you into the idea of do digital ownership, buy your games digitally, invest in this ecosystem, and ideally we'll let you carry these games with you to future platforms. And right now we are offering physical as an option, as we see with the PlayStation 5 and the Switch. But with that PlayStation 5 revision still rumored that will be digital only, it seems as though even PlayStation is getting ready to embrace that digital only direction. But if they do offer that add-on disc drive, they recognize consumers do want options. They will want that option in some cases of being able to buy games physically. But we as the console manufacturer and as a software publisher, we want you to stay digital only. And we don't know the pricing of what Sony's PlayStation 5 revision is going to be. We don't know how much that add-on optical drive could be. It could be $100. It could be more. It could be priced to a point where they are essentially pricing it out of, you know, consumer interest, because that would be something that interests them. If you can't buy it because it's too pricey, you're just going to buy your games digitally. And that's ultimately our plan and our goal.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think Sony, as you said, has dipped their toe in. Nintendo, I feel like NSO is something that you have to really look at and say, this is some of the things that they're doing to promote an all-digital future, because NSO will carry with you on your Nintendo account. There is no doubt about that. I fully expect to see NSO being carried forward through generations. But the scary part about all this is that, you know, with this digital storefronts, then there will be situations where licenses do expire. And even though, yes, you have made potentially made purchases, unless you are on a subscription-based service like Game Pass, where they can add and take things away as they see fit, which, again, ideally is what Microsoft really, really wants you to be on. They want you to be on that Game Pass subscription, because not only do they bring in more revenue every single month, they want to build that subscription base up. They also, you know, with more members, it gives them the opportunity to bring on bigger games potentially. get more interest from publishers that have been sitting on the fence about Game Pass. They've heard some things about it, but you know, if you've got, let's say, 50 million people subscribed to it, that's a lot sweeter than, say, 25 million. Mm-hmm. But you know, NSO, I feel like, is one of those things. It's very Game Pass-like for me because it is Nintendo's kind of digital service that will grow and expand and will carry along with you going forward. I mean, I fully expect to see NSO come forward. I fully expect to see, you know, PlayStation, what do they call it? PlayStation Premium Plus, whatever that service they have. yeah. I expect all those things, you know, now that we're kind of locked into those things. It's not as easy as back in the old days where Nintendo would just, you know, scrap their online service when they announced a new piece of hardware or whatnot. I think these days, because we are, you know, starting to move towards that all digital future, then you have to make sure that particular, you know, storefront is available to you and is brought forward during every single console generation that comes out. And that's really the big thing that I got from the slide deck was, yeah, look, you know, Microsoft is looking at building out new hardware potentially for a 2028 release. Of course, you know, all console manufacturers are iterating. They are working on, you know, the next batch of hardware. But I guess, you know, the common thing, the key thing between all of them is they've established their own digital storefronts or digital services that really now are things that we'll hear about and see for many, many years to come. You know, 2, 3, maybe even 4 generations from now, you know, hopefully Game Pass will still be around for Microsoft. You know, hopefully it's doing very well for them. But yeah, I mean, I don't expect these things to go away. I mean, the only thing we kind of touched on that will go away, unfortunately, is digital media and that I'm sorry, physical media. And that is definitely, you know, a real shame for someone like myself. But look, I don't have a problem with an all digital future, Nate. I think my biggest concern is that you just lose that freedom. You lose that flexibility to basically be in control. You're not in control of these games anymore. You don't have a disc in your hand that has, you know, ones and zeros on it anymore. That information is somewhere else, and that information is curated and presented to you for whatever duration, you know, you have a license to play that thing. And then when that particular time period expires, then that thing is then kind of taken away from you and put behind the curtain once again. And that's the part that really kind of worries me about, you know, about the all digital future. It's kind of the control that is taken from you and moved on to the hardware manufacturers in the end. And we can only kind of put our trust in them to do the right things. And while I think for the most part that will be true, there's going to be situations where, you know, games get delisted, things get taken away, maybe some DLC, you know, gets removed, or, you know, just scenarios where something was available to the consumer and then it wasn't for whatever reason. And those types of things really, really kind of bug me.
Yeah, that's the thing. In other digital-only storefronts, I believe it was Amazon, certain individuals had bought movies and their license had been revoked due to the manufacturer and distributor no longer having rights. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, you know, licensing is a big thing in gaming, be it for music, cars,
yep,
what have you. And that leads to a lot of delistings on the digital storefront. Now, you as the consumer, if you already own it, you can still re-download and access your game. So, you know, you do have that type of security. But to your point, you do lose control in the sense of once something is taken, and we can look to Nintendo as a prime example of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because back in 2021, in the calendar year of 2020, Nintendo had launched 2 products, Mario 35 and Super Mario 3D All-Stars. And they had put out these games are going to be available for a limited amount of time. They will be taken off the digital storefront on March 31st of 2021, and they followed through. There is now no means of being able to play Mario 35. It's completely shut down. And if you want to buy Super Mario 3D All-Stars, you have to go through the secondhand market where the prices are now inflated.
Yeah, ridiculously inflated, I might add. In fact, I'm going to look right now because 3D All-Stars is a game that is obviously no longer available. I think a loose copy now, just the cartridge, is going to cost you about $75. Wow. And a retail box copy is, I'm seeing, $105 right now.
That's a lot, man. That's double the price.
Absurd. Absolutely absurd. Look, and look, there are going to be people out there that say, well, you know, people had so much time to get their hands on 3D All-Stars. You know, it's their own fault for missing out. The window is closed. My response to that is people invest in ecosystems at different times. You know, you can't just assume that we all had a Switch at the same time. People may have just gotten a Switch, you know, 6 months ago. They may have got one last holiday and they want to play 3D All-Stars. They can't. They have to pay $105 on eBay to have the experience right. for it.
And that's the thing. And even Fire Emblem, the original Fire Emblem game was translated or release on Switch, where it was a digital-only game. I believe it retailed for $5 on the eShop. And then they had a Fire Emblem 35th anniversary or 30th anniversary collector's edition.
Yeah.
And once a certain period of time expired, the game was taken off the digital store. And, you know, the collector's edition, if you still find it, you could buy it. But that's the only way to officially play the translated version of the original Fire Emblem game. And Nintendo took away that digital option from you for really no reason beyond, oh, it was an anniversary release and now it's gone. So that is that risk of a digital only ecosystem and storefront, is that they can revoke that access. Now, the situation with Nintendo is a little different because they also took away retail access as well.
Right.
For, you know, seemingly no reason as well. And yeah, that's a little different in the context of what we're talking about here. But as the industry is shifting to digital only, because this benefits corporations, it benefits publishers in the sense that they no longer have to pay the licensing fee to Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. They no longer have to pay to ship the game. They don't have to have any cut with the retailer. The only cut they would have is with the console manufacturer, which can range between 20 and 30%, depending on the industry and the company in question. So now you go digital only, you're making more money, and you don't have to worry about street date leaks because there's no copies to take from a warehouse.
Right.
It's digital only. Unless your server is hacked, nothing will leak. And we saw some of the damage that a leaked street date copy can do. We saw God of War Ragnarok leak early.
Yes.
And Sony Santa Monica employees were livid at that happening. You also saw the case with some Nintendo games. When they leak early, they end up on piracy sites.
Tears of the Kingdom, 2 weeks yep. early.
Tears of the Kingdom, and it will be repeated with it. Well, it's repeated very often with the Pokemon games. It will be repeated with Mario Wonder in likely just a couple more weeks. So if you're a console manufacturer or any game publisher, you're pushing for a digital-only platform because you now eradicate leaks. Yep. And you make more money. So as we're shifting in that direction, do you think in a way Microsoft is being a pioneer in making this transition now in 2024? Or is it just they have the data to back it up? This is the direction they want to move in because their main interests are in Game Pass. Or do you think they do want to move the industry in that way and see if Sony and Nintendo also follow suit? Because as we said, both companies have kind of dipped their toe in the pool. They just haven't fully dove in yet.
I think really it all revolves around Game Pass, you know, to be honest. I don't know if, I mean, there may be some marketing data or some sales data that suggests, you know, the other things that you mentioned. But ultimately, I think the big move here is to make Game Pass seemingly the only thing that you want to buy an Xbox for better or for worse. Yes, the Microsoft Store will always exist. Yes, you can still purchase games that won't go away. But I think Microsoft is just going to continue to push Game Pass further and further along. And with that, I had a question for you that I wanted to ask. Now, you did mention that publishers, at least on the surface, would be happy that an all-digital future is coming for the reasons you said, and they're very, very valid reasons. You know, things about leaks get eradicated, basically, and there's less hassle with, you know, publishing physical products, of course. That's always something that they have to be focused on. And those things, you know, they can save money as well on those things. Getting digital, you know, getting your game through certification on digital is a lot easier than doing it for both digital and physical. Take it from me. I know I work at Limited Run Games. And look, I guess my question though is, if you're a publisher and you took a look at this, if you read through these slides that Microsoft unfortunately had leaked themselves, and you went through the slide deck and you said, okay, 2024, all digital Xbox future, 2028 looks like a new hardware, a new system's coming out. How would you feel, and of course Game Pass, you know, being the focus, you know, they want to get the Game Pass numbers. How would you feel as a publisher? Would you kind of be on board with what Microsoft is doing, or would you be a little hesitant as to what they're doing as far as, you know, all digital plus Game Pass being the main focus?
I think it would depend on the publisher that I am. If I'm a AAA publisher, if I'm an EA mm-hmm. type of publisher, I think I like what I see. Because when you look at EA, this was a company who was reluctant to bring Dead Space to retail, where they partnered with LRG
yep.
to bring a retail copy of that game, which would suggest to me that they didn't expect that many physical sales for a title like Dead Space, and they knew 70, 80% of the sales are going to be digital only. They just wanted to give the consumer a nice option of, well, let them have that choice of being able to buy a physical copy. LRG is a fine partner for us. They can do that pre-order window. Whatever comes in is what they're going to ship. But we know the majority of our base is digital only. After all, we're EA. We also have our own digital
right.
service with EA Plus.
What if you're not an EA, though? What if you're a... I mean, AAA is probably are feeling pretty comfortable, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure Game Pass deals are being negotiated with many big third-party games right now. But what if you, let's say, a AA developer? You have a bit of recognition, you have a name for yourself, but, you know, not that big kind of behemoth AAA company like an EA.
Yeah, I mean... See, it gets complicated there because if I am like that if I am that AA mm-hmm. publisher, I have to wonder what's really my retail presence to begin with. Because when you think of like the digital storefront, it's primarily dominated by AAA and indies.
Yep.
So those AA studios, you may want to have that retail presence because as some AAA studios move away from retail offerings, you kind of get a little more prominent as having that, you know, prime positioning of store shelving.
How do you think a game like Alan Wake 2 is going to do on Xbox right now compared to PlayStation?
Due to a digital only offering?
Yeah, it's all digital, as we know. There's no physical.
Right.
I mean, I think it'll do okay, right, on Xbox.
Yeah, I mean, Alan Wake already has the reputation on Xbox. I think it'll do well on the Xbox. And I think what you're trying to allude to is because it doesn't have a Game Pass deal,
yes,
will that Xbox ecosystem and that Xbox fan base potentially look beyond the game to other offerings that are going to be on Game Pass come the second half of October?
Yeah.
Because that Xbox base, and it's being very generalized here, has slightly been conditioned to wait for Game Pass releases.
Mm-hmm.
It's, hey, Alan Wake 2 looks fantastic. It's already being offered at a discount because it is a digital-only game. And Epic and Remedy said, hey, if we don't have a retail presence, we can come down on our price a little bit. and they did that. But yeah, a lot of Xbox fans are definitely conditioned to the point of, if I wait 3 or 6 months, maybe the game comes to Game Pass. So I think it'll still sell well because the game should review well. The previews were quite positive this week, mm-hmm. and it's a game of quality. And given its slight discount, I think it'll sell well on the Xbox overall. And I mean, it's kind of one of those situations where I don't think a retail presence day and date would have done the game any meaningful favors, because I think the majority of sales, be it on Xbox or PlayStation, are going to be digital for that type of game to begin with.
Right.
And I mean, I guess that's where, you know, Microsoft looks at it, and that's what's fueling their decision to come out with a purely digital only ecosystem in just about a year's time. But yeah, a Game Pass conditioning buying habits is going to be a curious thing for Microsoft to address late this generation and going into a new generation. Because once you warp buying habits, and we've seen this on Steam, where people wait for Steam sales, mm-hmm. they only buy select games at full price. And typically it's reserved for, you know, the elite of the elite releases that you're buying day one. So when you do have a service like Game Pass that is offering you Microsoft first party offerings and other third party games, it's naturally you have to adjust how you approach your purchases moving forward. But I mean, on that same token, if it's saving you money in terms of purchasing individual software, you could look at a release like Alan Wake 2 and say, hey, I have Game Pass. I saved money for, you know, not buying Forza.
Right.
So now maybe I'm enticed to buy Alan Wake 2. And I get that's kind of a utopian view of, I'm saving money by being subscribed to Game Pass, which means I have more money to buy on, you know, individual games.
Yep.
And that's not always how things work. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing that I'm sure publishers are all looking at it saying, I like this idea for this reason, but is this potentially limiting my sales potential by not having a physical option?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And I think, look, we're just going to have to wait and see how this plays out, as cliched as that sounds. But 2024, if they do actually give us this cylinder, this Brooklyn thing, and look, the current Series X, I mean, that'll still be in stores for a while. I'm expecting a little bit of overlap. I don't think it's just going to completely disappear immediately.
So yeah, that, it could be a year or yeah. whatever.
But it'll just be very, it's going to be, you know, it's like a mile. It's a moment, you know, it's like a big moment in video game history where all of a sudden you've got a platform maker that is no longer supporting physical, you know, and there's no optical drive anywhere. And that's something that is a big deal. Even though it may not seem to be a big deal to some people, especially, you know, younger people that are listening to this, it's actually going to be a pretty big deal when that day comes, and it will. And look,
it's sooner than later.
Yeah. My last question about this is, Phil Spencer did, like I said, did that PR damage control tweet where he said, you know, it's a shame that this happened and the way it did. Our plans have changed somewhat. Do you think there's any truth to that, that the plans have changed? Well, in a meaningful way, I should say, do you think that's actually a real thing, or do you think we'll just kind of, these slides will start to see kind of come to fruition over the next, you know, few years?
I think with these individual pieces of hardware, the refreshes, the revisions,
yeah,
I think they will happen as the slides dictate, because the slides, yes, are 3 years old, but that type of planning is always years in advance.
Yeah.
Now, some of the planning that could change is maybe they do bring a secondary Series X option that retains physical media, because that type of option, it has to go through focus testing. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to have that marketing research. And if you went to that and said, okay, we're only going to have digital only systems, no add-on drives or anything, now you want to see what that response is based on the focus groups.
Right.
And if it's overwhelmingly negative, you're going to pivot and say, okay, we have to sell an add-on, or we have to sell the Series X with the optical drive as a complementary option to the digital only SKU. And now that would be a change. Generally speaking, though, I think the majority of stuff will come to fruition, as we saw in the slides, with slight variations here and there. I think largely the things that had been changed was in relation to the software lineup that had leaked,
right,
which was already out of date.
Yeah.
When we saw it, you had games like Starfield on that was coming out a year prior to what it did.
Mm-hmm.
Hi-Fi Rush was still a code name.
Yep.
So I think some of that was largely what he's referring to changes. And even some of the next generation planning has likely changed or shifted in some capacity, because we were looking at things that were 2030.
The next gen stuff, you can assume that none of that stuff's really been locked down. Well, hadn't been locked down as of the making of the slide deck. Because, there was some chatter about potentially moving to ARM-based, which, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, if you are going to do that, that is also a hardware change, a significant one, because you've been on x86 since 2013. So, there's a lot of legacy that you have to think about when you do move away from that. And, of course, before that, they're on PowerPC. So they're no stranger to doing an architecture change. And ARM seems to be the future going forward. But yeah, that would be something that would require a lot more research, discussion, development, prototyping to really understand that better.
But I have one question for you that we'll end on. By going to a digital-only distribution model, could this potentially speed up game releases? Because now there is no manufacturing process. There is no need to stockpile games. A game goes through certification, and once it passes, it can release.
I want to say it will, Nate, but nothing in the industry has convinced me that games are getting shorter in terms of development time. They're only getting longer and longer and longer, and I don't really see that changing. I think digital only does have some advantages. It is easier to submit your game and get it through certification. You don't have to then submit a physical patch like what you have to do with physical media. But I think those gains from a development standpoint, I'm just talking from a development standpoint, aren't really that significant. I think the overarching complexity of making video games, as we're getting resolutions that are 4K and above. Now we're starting to hear some rumblings of 8K and all this ridiculous stuff right now. It only tells me that file sizes are only going to increase. Scope and complexity is going to only increase. I mean, gamers want really, they want the blockbuster games now. They want the flashy post-processing effects, the graphics, the ray tracing, the lighting, the engines. I mean, nothing about it says that, game development is going to get any cheaper or any faster. I think you may save some time with getting a physical game, a digital-only release out, but overall, games themselves are just getting more complex. Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing for me with a pure digital medium is that I think about all the shifts other industries have gone through. And you can look at the rise of the MP3, mm-hmm. where everyone was going digital only for their music with MP3 players. And then in the last 5 or so years, you've seen the rise of vinyl.
Yep.
And old technology, and it has, fantastic sound quality. And then I think with gaming, as we're moving into this digital direction, I think back to when Netflix and Gamefly mm-hmm. were first introduced and you still had Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, it's so much more convenient just have the game mailed to my house.
Right.
And now that we've been at that where it's, oh, the game can be delivered to my house if you choose to rent. And a lot of people don't even know Gamefly still exists. But I have the memories now, and I say to myself at times, I wish I could just go to a Blockbuster, pick up Assassin's Creed Mirage.
Yeah.
Take it home for the weekend, maybe play it for 10 hours, and then say, man, I really like that. And now I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to buy it, or I'm going to buy it digitally. And it's so weird that we went from a time where renting movies and games was such a staple to, oh, now it can be, it's conveniently delivered to my house, to the idea of renting anything is basically extinct.
Yeah.
Like you can rent digital movies still.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do it on YouTube.
Yeah. It's just not the same.
The vinyl thing is interesting to kind of think about because, yeah, vinyl has seen some type of resurgence, right? I mean, look, let's be honest. People that buy vinyl in 2023, they're either someone that has an expensive hi-fi setup at home, or they're just collectors, you know. I have some vinyl records that I've bought. Like I bought the Silent Hill 2 soundtrack. I don't even have a stereo system to play it on, but I have the vinyl, and I think it's cool. But vinyl has seen a resurgence, right? Whatever percentage that is, I couldn't say. But there, you know, you go to a bookstore like Barnes & Noble, there's a vinyl section. You go to Best Buy, there is a small vinyl section. Yep. Just some examples. Walmart, Target, they all have vinyl sections now. Unfortunately, with this all digital video game future, we will never see that resurgence of physical media in the same fashion. Because, go ahead.
But could you?
I don't see how you would unless you had that option for that optical drive as the option.
Yeah, that would be that's a good point. Because yeah, like with vinyl, any company can come in and produce.
Yeah, I think record player. I think the only thing that we'll probably see is that mini console thing again, where they basically curate 20 games and they put it on some plastic device that looks like a miniature old console that you used to have. You know, I could definitely see that. Emulation devices, obviously, are very, very popular right now. You know, you got your cheap Android device that runs 10,000 games, stuff like that. I mean, I could definitely see hardware makers maybe tap into that again. They did the mini console thing a few years ago. Seemed like it was doing really well. But yeah, that whole concept of we're bringing back physical games, you know, for the enthusiasts out there and the collectors. I don't see how that would work. If you're controlling the way that you offer games to your customers, and it's an all digital method, then I don't see that whole concept of vinyl coming back, for video games.
Yeah, see, that's a good point. Like, I wasn't thinking of the platforms lacking the optical drive.
Right.
I was just thinking like, oh wow, physical games really aren't offered anymore. But if all of a sudden you just had a publisher come out, like a limited run, where you did have these physical games rising again and people were buying them, you'd have publishers stop and say, maybe we should go back. Because a lot of old technology has had that resurgence. It's come back into popularity. But as you were saying, if the console manufacturers strip away all physical means of reading and consuming it, there can't be that resurrection because nothing can play it. So there is no market for any publisher to come out and say, we're offering physical media.
Yeah.
Because we can't.
Unless we get those detachable drives. I mean, I think that's the key thing. If we get the detachable drive, then I think we're going to be okay for a while. We'll just have to wait and see.
I mean, it's an interesting time that we're in right now as the shift to digital is well underway. Microsoft seems to be the first company who is going to fully embrace it. Sony is right there behind them potentially. We have to see how those PlayStation 5 revisions come to market and whether or not the optical drive add-on is indeed legitimate or not, or if the platforms are digital only as rumors suggest. And then we have to see how Nintendo approaches the next generation. Could we potentially see that two SKU approach of one reading physical media and then them going the PlayStation route and offering a digital only SKU as well as a complimentary option? So a lot of uncertainty right now going into the coming generations. But one thing is certain is that digital gaming is here. It's here to stay. And it's just a question of, will it become the primary means of consumption for the industry, or will physical media always be an option for the three console manufacturers? We will find out in the near future. But with that, I'm going to pivot to some of the Streamlab questions we have for this week. Our first question comes from Kaiser or Literio, who donated $5 and writes, "Thanks for all the insights, guys. Sorry for the speculation, but the March whispers have me curious. Would Nintendo launch Switch 2 before June, if only to be on time for a big unannounced multi-platform release, Monster Hunter World 2?
What do you think?
I mean, I see the line of thought you have there, that if a third party studio has a major release along the lines of a Monster Hunter World 2, that Nintendo would want to be there day and date with such a release. I don't think the March whispers would have anything to suggest something like that. I think the March whispers from Gamescom are really, I mean, that's what they are. They're whispers, and what they're whispering to remains uncertain. I think with a game like Monster Hunter World 2, Nintendo could easily get away launching 6 to 7 months after the introduction of a game like that and have it as a launch game and still be very well received. I don't think Nintendo themselves is looking to launch the hardware with any specific third-party game. Our second question comes from Adrian, donated $5, and write, "Hey, Nate and MVG, Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn came out in March 2019, so 2 years after the Switch. Do you also see Nintendo support the Switch for 2 more years with smaller releases when the next console is out? Thanks."
I could see it, maybe not 2 years, but I could definitely see a year, maybe 18 months, maybe 2 years. I mean, the Switch has been so successful for them for such a long time. I could potentially see 2 years.
Yeah, I could see the window of anywhere between, you know, 18 to 24 months. I think it will depend on the games that are slated and what Nintendo has in the pipeline at this point. Because a lot of the games, I'm sure they are planning to position now as Switch 2 games as opposed to the current Switch, especially, you know, when it comes to like a new 3D Mario or any of their primary studio games. Smaller titles, I think that could easily last until, let's say, the system does come out in 2024. I could see Switch getting support until the conclusion of 2025, maybe the first half of 2026, and then it will be sunset in terms of software support. Then had a follow-up question from Adrian with an additional $5, and they write, "So let's pretend Nintendo does support the Switch for 2 more years with smaller titles, ports, and remakes. What are your top 3 most wanted ports, remaster, or remakes? Mines are Luigi's Mansion 1, Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix, and Wind Waker and Twilight Princess."
Well, we already got Metroid Prime 1 remastered, which I think is fantastic. I'd like to see them do 2 and 3 eventually. There's rumors, obviously. Beyond that, I don't really know. I still want to see that F-Zero GX, though. That's probably another one that I'd like. You have anything?
Excitetruck.
Excitetruck would be cool.
Want to see like a remaster or a remake of that. Trying to think of Wave Race Blue Storm. Like to see that in nice HD visuals. And Odama.
Interesting.
Remember Odama?
I do. Yeah.
Just because. Why not? So out there that everyone would be like, why? I mean, it's a unique game. Then had a dollar donation from Jackie G. Question for MVG. How does developing around a half-step console differ when compared to developing for a different console? D Do you need to take the different hardware into account, or can you make the game knowing it will run fine?
You do need to take the different hardware into account. The main difference between working on, we'll say, a pro or a half step versus a generational change is the half step kind of implies that you're working with the same SDK, even though you have maybe some more powerful features at your disposal. But essentially, you have the same peripherals, you have the same interface, you have everything is the same. You're very much familiar with it. But a generational change usually means there's an introduction of some new type of hardware that has an API associated with it. And a great example of what I mean by that is PlayStation 5, when they introduced the SSD, there is a specific API that works only to access the SSD. You can kind of use traditional kind of file IO calls, but what you'll find is you don't get really much in terms of performance gains that way. But if you kind of tap into the new API that manages the SSD, then that's where you get your gains. Same thing as with the haptics. Obviously, that was introduced as well. So really, the main difference is there are things that have changed. There are the inclusion of new features, and potentially when it comes to things like graphics and sound processing, any differences that are there, from a generation need its own kind of API to develop again. So really the main difference is there. Because with something like the PlayStation 4 Pro, for example, versus the PS4, when you build software against that, you're not really doing anything different. All you're really saying is this game can run both on the PS4 Pro and on the PS4. Now, you could do a resolution bump, but apart from kind of minor things like that, minor little tweaks, you're not really doing anything different versus, having a new set of APIs to work with when you upgrade to a new generation.
A very detailed and thorough answer.
Hopefully that answers it, by the way. It wasn't just waffling.
That is our final Streamlabs question for this week. If you'd like to support the channel, we have a Streamlabs link in the description below. Donate any dollar amount. Ask a question. We will answer it at the end of the episode. Donate $100 or more, and we will dedicate the episode to you. And with that, I'd like to thank MVG for joining me, as always.
Always a pleasure, Nate. Thanks for having me on.
And let us know your thoughts on the potential digital-only future for the Xbox and potentially the PlayStation and Nintendo in the comments section below. And until next time, continue to embrace the hate.